Ready or not, here it comes. Though cannabis has been made illegal by local, state, national, and international law and treaty, an entire industry is being built on its use. And so today we pause to ask, is it time to get down to cannabis?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,060th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Ushuaia who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. But whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Strubia on the boards. So Jason.
It is my pleasure.
Now, have you ever considered getting into the legal business of cannabis?
I think Mom and Dad could be listening. No comment. No comment.
Okay, no comment. There you go. Well, folks, back in the salad days, I worked as a cameraman producer for NBC Magazine with David Brinkley on a piece called Homegrown, which detailed the birth of the domestic cannabis industry here in the United States. For the piece, our crew, which consisted of an NBC senior producer, my wife, who is a sound person, and myself as a cameraman producer, shot 12 miles of 16-millimeter film of 26 cannabis gardens from Seattle to Santa Barbara over the course of a single growing season. Now, the key to talking our way into these illicit gardens was the growers' pride in their secret gardens. All we had to do was convince them we would not tell anyone who they were or where they were, but would show the entire world their beautiful gardens on network television. At $3,000 a plant or so, the growers' gardens featured some of the most pampered plants ever grown. And as I got to know the growers and filmed their plants, I realized there was simply no way government would ever enforce its prohibition on the plant, if that is indeed their objective. Through the years, I let go of my fascination with cannabis to focus on the what's eating what of food. But recently, a radio associate, a long time, Les Israelo, tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Look what's coming to town. In a few days, 3,000 people will gather in Oakland for the Cannabis Business Summit and Expo, during which they will talk about doing the legal businesses of the illicit plant. That gathering and others like it, especially the one that just happened in New York City, leads us to ask, is it time to get down to the business of cannabis?" And here to help us guide our way through this incredible new industry, we have Les Israelo. Les, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning, Michael. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you for volunteering to be our guide. And you've put together a lot of very, very interesting people to join us here today.
It's an exciting show.
So it started off with a convocation coming to Oakland, and you said, look at this. So what exactly is coming to Oakland?
The National Cannabis Industry Association is putting on the third annual Cannabis Business Summit and Expo in Oakland this coming June 20th to the 22nd. I guess that's Monday through Wednesday. Yeah. And it'll be offering cannabis professionals the perfect blend of networking opportunities, applicable education, and access to policymakers, including Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom.
Now, Les, is this the same kind of convention that was just held in New York City?
I believe so. It was similar. But this one has both business as well as kind of a meet and greet, learning about the business itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the second show we put together on the emerging cannabis industry. In the first show, we talked about, you know, how is it possible that a plant banned by international treaty is serving as the foundation of this emerging new industry. But ready or not, it's happening anyway, and here it comes. And you put together some very interesting people for us to really help us get to know the extent to which this industry is developing. And so would you like to introduce your first guest for us?
Absolutely. Kevin Calabari is on the line. This guy has it going on. And everybody that, what's amazing is everybody that's going to be on the show today, I believe, is in their early 30s. He has Denver Relief Consulting, Cresco Labs, Silver Sage Wellness, and Denver Relief. So right now, let's say hi to Kevin.
Welcome aboard, Kevin.
Thank you. Welcome to the food chain.
You bet. You know, Kevin, you're involved in a whole bunch of things, but one of the more interesting things you were involved with was chasing Governor Hickenlooper around Colorado in a chicken costume.
What exactly
were you doing there?
Well, that was back in my activism days. Not that I'm still not an activist, but I was a little bit more out there with it back then. That was about 11 years ago, and we had passed a decrim initiative in Denver. Denver became the first major city to decriminalize an ounce or less of cannabis in the United States. He was mayor of Denver at the time, and now he's governor of Colorado. But we saw arrests rise, even though voters had overwhelmingly supported that decrim of cannabis. So we saw arrests rise on cannabis. He failed to debate that topic with us. There was always a little bit of hypocrisy in Governor Hickenlooper's history with this topic, because he made his fame and his fortune from selling beer. Something that we know to be far more dangerous to society. And he just failed to really buy into the SAFER initiative, which is what we were pushing back then, a safer alternative for enjoyable recreation.
And you're right there on the firing lines. Colorado, of course, has legalized the recreational use of cannabis. So you see a lot of businesses getting involved in cannabis business, right?
Yeah, you know, Colorado is definitely one of the older regulated markets. So it's the first medical, the first recreational to really get up and running. It's working out really well. It's not perfect. It's not without its hiccups. But as far as, as far as what people thought it might be negatively, we haven't seen those things transpire. We now have 26 states where we have legal medical cannabis in some fashion across the country. We have Alaska, Oregon, Washington, Colorado right now legal recreationally. And we've got one third of the country this fall, counting Pennsylvania and Ohio and the legislative action that just passed. But one third of the country voting on some level of cannabis legalization this year, which is just huge. And that includes Arizona and Nevada recreationally.
So ready or not, here it comes.
It's coming, and it's large. And, the Cannabis Business Summit that you guys were talking about really is. NCIA is the only trade association representing this industry on the federal level. We have the issues with this being a Schedule I drug. The federal government saying that there is no medicinal value, that it has a high propensity for addiction. So we're going to see that fight happen, whether it gets rescheduled or descheduled. But this industry is growing, whether the feds act or not. And the DEA under Obama has been defunded the last couple of years for going out. They can't go after these businesses that are compliant with state law. So states like California that have been muddling around in this gray area for a while are finally going to become formalized and regulated, and we're just going to see it explode. Knowing the size of California's economy in general, when you add cannabis to that equation, it's going to be something special.
Now, you help, you have a consulting business. You help businesses get set up with all of the paperwork and everything, correct?
Yeah, we primarily help folks through merit-based application processes. These are really competitive processes that take into account local support and approval, the quality of your team, the amount of money you have in your bank account, the progress that you have, the intent on pursuing post-license with regard to environmental stewardship, community involvement, research and development medically. There's all these things that are really entering the fray as traditional industry seeps in, and that's really creating a lot of competition for very few licenses in some of these states. So we've helped folks in 12 different states, BC, Canada, working with folks in Colombia, Australia, Puerto Rico, on winning these licenses, and it's pretty exciting.
So very competitive process. You can't just roll into town and open up a medical marijuana store and get away with it then.
No, and, there's some states that are a little more open to small market operators getting in or small operators getting in. They have the lower barriers to entry. Oregon's a great example of that. California's going to be very similar. People that were existing in the industry, a lot of small operators, especially up in the Humboldt area, really fought hard to maintain their opportunity here when these licenses get issued. So even though on the East Coast you see a lot of very limited license structures, like New York has 5, Minnesota has 2, Illinois has 21, out in California, we're probably going to see thousands and thousands of licenses issued to varying sizes of businesses.
Mm-hmm. Kaylin, what do you think would happen if the government just threw up its hands and said, "Olly, olly, oxen free, anybody who wants to grow it can grow it"? What would happen to the industry then?
I don't think that use changes much with these law changes. I think it just brings people out of the shadows. So, I think it's going to be very similar to beer eventually. I'm sorry?
And how do we get in touch with you, Kaylin, if people want to check in with you?
I can be reached.
Your website? You have a website?
Yeah, www.denverleafconsulting.com or denverleaf.com, either one of those.
Thank you very much, Kaylin, and keep up the good work. And, folks, we will be right back with more of the legal marijuana business on the Food Chain Radio program. Do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
House plants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Are we back? Hello, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. And today, What's Eating What is a brand new industry that's emerging from the prohibition of cannabis, though still illegal by treaty and by law. States and local jurisdictions are saying to heck with it all and opening up their worlds to a legal cannabis business, and it's becoming a huge industry by the extent of what we see today. Les Israelo is here to guide us through this industry. We just talked with Kaylin Kalbari, who's with Denver Relief Consulting. He helps people set up dispensary businesses, a highly competitive endeavor because you have to compete for a limited number of licenses. Les, who we have next?
Michael, we have another incredible person to come on the line. It's Matt Lee, co-founder of Jetty Extracts. Jetty Extracts is a cannabis extract company founded in 2013 with his two other buddies. They were surfer guys down in San Diego, and they specialize in supercritical CO2, solventless, and rosin extraction. They offer a whole line of cannabis oil products, but are most recognized for their pre-filled vapor cartridges. Plus, they have an incredible distribution system going on with over 200 locations. They also have sweet bricks that they give to their oils with Sweet Bricks' Mind Tricks product. And then the biggest thing that's coming down the pike is Thorn Street Brewery, a collaboration which Matt will talk about, and then he'll have the shelter project that he wants to mention also. Matt, well, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate you having me on.
Appreciate you being with us, Matt. So, a San Diego surfer? Which Jetty?
Jetty?
Jetty? Yeah, Jetty Extract.
Yeah, Jetty was our local surf break. You know, we all kind of spent the last couple decades surfing off that rock down in Ocean Beach and named our company after it. That's
yeah,
how the
happiness is within your reach when you live in Ocean Beach, right?
I haven't even heard that one before, but I like it.
I used to live it. Well, let me ask you this. Surfers getting together, enjoying a few puffs after surfing, and you got to talking about all that could be done. And one of the things that's really fascinating about what you're doing is that you're cooking down cannabis and extracting the terpenes, right?
Yeah, that's Well, that's how we started getting the terpenes was, you know, through our extraction processes, you know, we would end up with very potent oil. But in the process, we were burning off all those natural flavors and smells that, you know, people love about cannabis. So that was a problem. So the way we found to fix that was to extract the terpenes off first, off of the plant material through a distillation
now process. Now, what exactly are the terpenes for people who don't know?
Yeah, sorry about that. So terpenes are natural compounds found in all plants that give those plants their characteristic smell and flavor. So orange smells like an orange because of the terpenes in the orange. Hops are like hops because of their terpenes, and cannabis smells like cannabis because of theirs. What's neat about cannabis is, you know, there's about 150 different terpenes found in that plant, which is unusually high for any other plant. So with hops, you know, you have 30 varietals. With cannabis, you have 1,000. So we knew if we could make some beer there, that would kind of open the door to just thousands of different flavors and smells.
You know, for those who have not had the experience of being in a cannabis garden with fully ripe Sinsemilla cannabis, the smells are incredibly intoxicating. So you're somehow able to extract those smells and put them into beer?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, it's a lot like essential oil, right? You can go out and get lavender, you know. It's the same process even. But it is quite incredible. You have just this little concentrated amount, maybe a milliliter, and it smells like, you know, putting your head in a pound of, you know, fresh marijuana. It's incredible. So we, you know, when making beer, we actually use a very, very low dose.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, San Diego's famous for local breweries. I think it went 200 local breweries in the San Diego area.
Yes, that's right.
How is this notion of cannabis-infused beer going over? Corey, now, do you get the THC in the beer as well, or just the smell in the beer?
No, not at all. I mean, that's legally why we can do what we're doing right now, is there's 0% THC in the terpene oil. So we actually submitted it to the TTB, which is the outfit that regulates what ingredients are acceptable in the beer world. And waiting to hear back on them, but all signs seem to be looking good. So that's kind of how we do that. I mean, maybe down the line, you know, we could add THC to it, but I think that's
just,
you know,
down the line.
Future. Yeah.
And how are the local breweries reacting to this notion?
You know, it's pretty funny. I had a list of, you know, 5 of my favorite breweries that I was going to approach, and I had my pitch down, and I was just expecting rejection all over the place, and that just wasn't the case. In fact, every single one got really hungry, and they all wanted to work with me, and, you know, our email's been nonstop with brewers asking us for terpenes. Once I saw that going on, I started working with Thorn Street and Eric O'Connor, because that's my favorite brewery here in San Diego, and it's gone gangbusters. It's been a top seller since day one, and they can't make enough. It's been pretty crazy. It's created quite the buzz.
And so, given the incredible number of terpenes in cannabis and the number of different cannabis varietals, there's almost an unlimited number of cannabis-flavored beers that, or whatever one could make, correct?
Exactly, and that's kind of what's neat about it and why it can only be used in craft beers. It's so hard to maintain consistency because even the same strain grown, you know, different batches are going to come out different depending on how they were grown. So it's extremely small batch. So we're trying to find farms that are running, you know, single strain on that farm and doing, you know, massive steam distillations on them to get at least one strain of cannabis so we can do a large beer run and maintain some sort of consistency. So in some ways it's frustrating that we can't maintain the same flavor, but in other ways it's really neat. You know, every batch will be a little different.
Which is the nature of local breweries anyway, right?
That's kind of how I feel, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's not the only thing you do. We understand that you also have a way of infusing candy.
Yeah, well, that's kind of been around for a long time, you know, making edibles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we decided we kind of wanted to get in that side of the game, but rather than, you know, making the typical brownie or Rice Krispie treat. None of us are chefs. You know, we know how to extract cannabis, but not cook. So I decided to kind of go back out there and try to find some companies that were good at what they did. And I was looking at, you know, some of these craft bean to bar chocolate, you know, chocolatiers. And we were about to pitch them when serendipitously a friend of mine called and said that his ex-girlfriend had a famous toffee company in San Diego and were kind of looking to get in the industry. That was Sweet Bricks, and they make gourmet toffee. They have about 50 flavors. They win all kinds of awards. Amazing
hey,
girls.
Hey Matt, it's Les on the line. We have Jenna on the line. When do we bring her in?
No one can tell that story better than her. So.
Okay, Jenna Perez, Sweet Bricks, and Mind Tricks. Welcome to the food chain, Jenna.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, toffee girl. You're the toffee girl, right?
Yes, one of them.
One of them. And we understand that you have a very famous brand of toffee and that you make in the San Diego area. And now you added something called Mind Tricks to your business.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've spent a couple years perfecting our toffee recipe. It's made with organic sugar. It's a family recipe. And, you know, so much love and time has gone into this product and you know, being approached by Jetty Extracts. Now we're just adding one extra very special ingredient.
And there it is. We're going to have to take a quick break, but I'd like to hold you over the break. Can you stay with us, Jenna?
Yes.
Okay, Matt, thank you so much for joining us. And we get a hold of Matt at jettyextracts.com. That's jettyextracts.com. Simple as that. The surfers with the extracts. Next, Jenna, do stay tuned. Welcome back out there. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for the hour, with Les Israelo, who is our guide to the legal industry being built around the illegal plant cannabis. Cannabis is the subject today, and we're meeting a lot of very interesting people involved in this industry. Les, we're talking with Jenna Perez. Would you like to give her a quick introduction?
Well, Jenna has an incredible business. She also has a business partner. Jenna, what, Desiree Glad, is that your business partner's name?
Desiree Glad.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about how you two guys met and how you got started.
Sure. Well, I actually started making toffee a few years back with my brothers. It's my mom's recipe. And we basically started making it out of necessity. Both of our parents were terminally ill, and we kind of just wanted to make some extra cash. So we weren't really serious about it. And it kind of just took off really quickly. So I think within a year, we tried to open a little retail shop in downtown San Diego. And 2 weeks after we were ready to open, and we had a fire in the building.
Oh, wow.
Everything. And I kind of threw my hands up and said, you know what, maybe this isn't what I'm supposed to do. So I took off. I moved up to Northern California. And a couple months later, my best friend from high school called me and said, hey, I really believe in this. I want you to come back. I'm going to invest. And that was Desiree. We've been friends for 16 years, and so now we have a little candy shop in downtown San Diego.
I hear it's quite the shop, though. Tell us about how the whole thing with Matt came about opening up with Super Clinic.
Sure. So we basically, you know, started receiving a lot of orders at Sweet Bricks. We couldn't handle the production. We don't have our own kitchen. So we launched a Kickstarter to try to build our own spot, and the Kickstarter failed. So we started looking at other options, kind of like what happens next. And Matt from Jetty just walked through our door and said, hey, we've got this project we're working on. We really want to work with you guys. And it just moved really quickly from there.
Wow.
And that would be the Mind Tricks part of the Sweet Bricks business, right? The infused toffee candy?
Correct. So Correct. Sweet Bricks is just the regular toffee. Mind Tricks is our Jetty collaboration, cannabis-infused toffee.
And with respect to the cannabis-infused toffee, Mind Tricks being the title of it, one would think that it's has actual THC content in it, right?
Correct, it does. Each bag is 100 milligrams of THC.
Right. And then, so this puts it in the category of medicine, right?
Yes, it does.
So you sell it through medical marijuana dispensaries?
We do. And if you go to mindtrickscoffee.com, you can see a list of dispensaries that are currently carrying the product.
Mm-hmm. Now, when people have the infused Mind Tricks coffee, what exactly happens to them?
It's a delicious product. So, I mean, there's a sense of, you know, joy just eating candy itself. But, 100 milligrams of THC definitely has a psychoactive effect.
Okay. So is it kind of, do you get the same effect that you would if you were smoking it then?
Well, ingesting marijuana is a different effect, more of like a full body experience as opposed to, you know, smoking it or something else. So it is a little bit different.
I think what Michael is trying to say is he'd like a little sample, Jenna.
Well, let me ask you this, Jenna. Is the fact that you're selling marijuana-infused toffee, is it having a deleterious effect on your Sweet Bricks business? I mean, you have this wonderful reputation for beautiful toffees, and now you're selling infused cannabis toffees. Is that having an adverse effect on your legal business? Do people complain about that in any way?
Well, that's one of the things we really had to consider when we jumped into this. And since we've launched and, you know, we're very open about it, we've had nothing but positive feedback and support. And if anything, after trying Mind Tricks, people who have never heard of Sweet Bricks are turning over to the Sweet Bricks side. Hey, where can I get some more of that? You know, I want to eat some more. So they really, both businesses go hand in hand, and they work well together. And we haven't had any negative feedback so far.
Well, I guess in classical business, that would be considered a successful line extension, you know, where you take one line of products and add something that makes it unique and different, and then you have a successful two successful products instead of one.
Yes, absolutely.
Where are you going from here with your business? Have you thought about other possibilities?
I'd love to create another line of edibles that is, maybe less sugar and something more on the healthy side. I know there's definitely a place for sweets, and it's kind of a special treat, but I think that's probably what's next for Mind Tricks.
Okay, and how do people track you down if they want to taste some Sweet Bricks or some Mind Tricks?
For Sweet Bricks, you can visit our website at sweetbricks.com. We ship anywhere in the world. We also have a little retail store in downtown San Diego at 917 E Street. You can visit mindtrickstoffee.com to see all the locations where you can pick up some Mind Tricks. And also follow us on Instagram, mindtrickstoffee or Sweet Bricks.
Jenna Perez, thank you so much for joining us on the Food Chain Radio program today. And
look forward
to a taste.
Thank you.
Hey, Michael, I want to jump in here one quick question. Matt asked me to promote his shelter project where one for you, one for cancer, free oil to any cancer patient in California with a valid medical recommendation.
Wow. So there you go. And how do people get in touch with him on that?
Should I give him the cell phone number?
No, just give him the website.
JettyExtracts.com/shelterproject.
Okay, great. Thank
you. There
you
go. Simple as that. Thank you very much, Jenna. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Celeste, who's next?
We have on the line Damian Martini of the Greenwise Consulting.
Damian Martini, welcome to the Food Chain.
It's Damian Martin, but thank you very much.
Oh, sorry.
Damian Martin. Okay, good. That's what I had. But Damian Martin is attorney, Greenwise Consulting, out of Denver, correct, Damian?
So we have an office here in Los Angeles, and then an office in Arizona, and then Denver as well.
Well, it would seem like the legal cannabis business based on an illegal plant would be ideal turf for attorneys.
That's great.
given the all of the red tape that surely must be involved in setting up a legal business based on an illegal plant, there must be Lots of rules and regulations and hoops people must jump through. Do you help them on that?
That's exactly what we do. So to your point, I kind of focus here primarily in California, but we just had a law that passed or became effective January 1st of this year that is going to set the framework for all that stuff. So there's going to be all kinds of complicated rules and regulations for cannabis businesses to comply with.
Damien, we're going to have to take a quick break, but I'd love to pick up this when we get back from the short break. Folks, this is The Food Chain, Michael Olson with Les Israelo, and attorney Damien Martin of Greenwise Consulting. He's going to tell us what it's going to take to open up our very own dispensary. Maybe here in California, but probably around the world. Who knows? Do stay tuned. Right back. Ready or not, here it comes, the legal cannabis business based on the illegal cannabis plant. How on earth will this work? Well, we have some legal help here to help us out. Les, who do we have working with us here?
Damien Martin,
Greenwise
Consulting Extraordinaire.
Okay, Damien Martin, we were talking a little bit about how laws are changing rapidly here in California, but throughout the United States as well. It seems like a riot of change because each little community is working up its own laws and each state is working up its own laws. And, of course, the federal government is kind of locked into its law, so it's a giant mess as far as I can see. How see it from your perspective?
Well, I mean, so as far as the real big mess at this point in California is the fact that in order to have a legal cannabis business, as you mentioned, you have to be legal at your local government level, and there's about 500-plus local governments in the state of California, and each one can enact its own cannabis law. So that makes it extraordinarily complicated because every city and every county is different. As you kind of highlighted, the state has its own regime, which will come online in 2018, and will set a whole new framework of rules and regulations for how to conduct a cannabis business. And then we're starting to see some major changes at the federal level as well. Actually, just in this last week, a provision was put into a spending bill to allow banks potentially to serve cannabis businesses throughout the nation. But we're seeing the changes. It's all heading in the right direction. And there is a great opportunity to actually have a legal business in the cannabis industry, you know, at the state level.
Yeah, you brought up a very interesting notion, in fact, that banks cannot take cannabis money at this time, right? So if you own a cannabis dispensary, you're running around with bags of cash.
Absolutely.
Is that true?
That's well, that's absolutely, particularly the case in California. Some of the other states that have legal recreational cannabis, the businesses have state chartered banks, so those are banks that are not, that follow state law as opposed to federal law. They've been providing services to cannabis businesses. In California, it's not even that robust at all. And to your point, that's exactly what's going on, is that cannabis businesses deal, particularly dispensaries, deal primarily in cash. And obviously that creates a number of security concerns. Just having tons of cash lying around in a business encourages robberies, and that was some of the driving force for that. The Senate Appropriations Committee looking at this rule and then potentially changing things and providing the opportunity for these businesses to start banking from banks that are regulated by the federal government.
Michael, let me just jump in one quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Damien, we talked a little earlier about the effect of Microsoft jumping into this whole business. Tell us what your thoughts are.
So, actually, just to give everybody a little bit of context, Microsoft is going to be supporting a company, it's called Kind Financial, that is going to be selling the software to to governments that track the cannabis, is what's called seed to sale. That's the whole process of, you know, labeling a plant and then figuring out who consumes it ultimately at the end of the supply chain. All that really does is just lend further legitimacy. I think there's no coincidence between the fact that this week we're talking about the U.S. Congress looking at providing cannabis business opportunity to federal banking, and Microsoft moving into the industry. I don't believe in coincidences at this point with how the laws function in this industry. But like I said, all it really does is just lend further legitimacy to the industry to see such a large company want to be involved in it.
So when somebody wants to get involved in it and they come to you, what's the first step in this whole process of becoming legal?
The first step in California is really straightforward. It's getting legal at your local government level. It's that simple. What you need to do is that simple, but how we do it is work. It's complicated because, like I said, every local government's different, and we have a lot of local governments in California essentially have decided to be dry counties, so to speak, when it comes to cannabis businesses. So a lot of our work is going into local governments and getting them to change their law and to start to allow cannabis businesses. And that's, for any business, that's the first step. And that's the way the legal framework is set up in California. Get legal at your local government level, then in 2018, come and apply for a state license.
I guess that would mean donating liberally to the mayor's reelection campaign.
I don't want to necessarily go that far, but it does mean being connected politically at your local level.
Okay. All right. Very good. And how do we get in touch with you, Damien?
We have a website. It's www.gwcpro.com. My email address is Damien, D-A-M-I-A-N, at gwcpro.com. My number, if you want to call that as well, 757-652-0460. And we can also be found on Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, all social media.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us from Greenwise Consulting in Colorado, where it is legal. Right?
Thank you very much. Yep.
All right. Thank you very much. Next up, Les, who do we have?
Corey Barnett. He's the founder and chief executive officer of District Growers out of Washington, D.C.
Wow. Right to the nation's capital. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with Les Israelo. We're taking a look at the legal cannabis business built on the illegal cannabis plant. It looks like, to me, regardless of what the government says or the treaties it has signed, that this industry is coming online very quickly. So, what do you think? Is it time to get down to cannabis? That's the question on the table today on the Food Chain Radio Program. Right back to Washington, D.C. Well, so much to talk about and so little time to talk about it in. Les, would you like to introduce Corey for us?
All right. Corey Barnett, founder and chief executive officer of District Growers, a full-service grower and producer of cannabis concentrates, and cannabis-infused products. Corey wanted to chat a little bit about the products, children's names. And so, Corey, why don't you say hi to the audience?
How's it going, guys?
Fantastic.
Very good. Very good. Corey, Les mentioned the fact that you're very concerned about how cannabis is being presented to the general public and expressing an interest in, you know, changing that position from being the Cheech and Chong kind of stoner thing to elevate the image of cannabis a little bit, especially in protecting the children. You'd like to address that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's obvious that our industry suffers from somewhat of a stigma. In addition, that taboo seems to follow us all the way down to the actual products that we make. We have a lot of producers that are in our marketplace that try to piggyback off of more well-known brands that are in the main space that do tend to sell their products to children. So, like, for example, like you may have, I'm sure you guys have heard of Reese's Pieces.
Right.
Well, a few years ago, there used to be a company that was producing reefer pieces. And so that's literally a play off of a children's candy or a candy that's targeted largely at children. If we're going to develop as an industry, if we're going to really sort of move into the mainstream, really have it become used both as a medicine and as a recreational adult use product, then we as producers in our industry do have to take you know, all due steps necessary to make sure that we're producing products that stand on their own and don't ride off the, or don't piggyback on other industries.
Is there any enforcement mechanism that would help you out, or is it just kind of voluntary, or you just kind of point it to offenders and shame them out of business?
No, actually, states are beginning to take a look and notice on those types of initiatives. In other words, you know, you're having both state legislatures and, in some instances around the country, even local legislatures come in and say how you can advertise, what you can't do, can't show weapons and, you know, scantily clad dressed women in advertisement. In Colorado, we've just recently seen where, you know, regarding certain edible types, you can no longer shape edibles in the form of animals, people, or things of that nature. And so there are legislative efforts that are beginning to pop up that are trying to curtail some of this. Here in Washington, D.C., we actually have to have some of our brands approved by our Department of Health to make sure that these brands are not, you know, sort of compromising the industry to begin with. So I think that to a certain degree that can be very healthy. But you know, ideally I would hope that our industry sort of stands up and takes the more responsible note and engages in a degree of self-governance that allows us to continue to flourish.
Corey Burnett, District Growers, and you can check in with Corey at districtgrowers.com, District for the District of Columbia. Thanks so much, Corey. Les Israelo, thank you so much for pulling all of these pieces together. What do you think? Is it time to get down to business?
Well,
the business of cannabis?
There is no two ways about it. This whole thing with Microsoft getting into the, whatever you want to call it, cannabis business or the software business, they're involved in it.
Okay, and so there we go. Folks, we had a great time. Kayvon Kalatbari, Matthew Lee, Jenna Perez, Damian Martin, and Corey Burnett, thank you all. And remember, Michael Olson's first law of the food chain, agriculture, is the foundation.
If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.